and welcome to episode 172 of Speak Beastie for March 5th, 2023. I'm Anne.
I'm Shannon.
And we are joined today by a very special guest. You know her, you love her, and if you're on our Patreon, you love her wallpapers. It's Liz from our social media team. Hi, Liz.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Pleasure as always. Thanks for joining us. Someone else that we are so glad to have join us. This is actually the least tortured segue I think I've had ever. is because, and it's good because this week's Patreon supporter is my mom, Jane. Thank you for your support, Mom.
I
don't remember what segue I came up with for the last episode.
It was pretty good. I was impressed.
I was so proud of myself. I was gearing up for it. I was like, I'm gonna do it, just like Anne.
That's my legacy, is extremely tortured segues.
I love that.
So once again, thank you, Mom, Jane, for
thanks,
your support.
Mom,
we literally could not do this show without you.
Thank you, Anne's mom. Ooh, so we have some fun stuff on the Phoenix Register today.
Yay!
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs knees and how.
So, in case you've missed it, magical creatures are coming to Universal Japan. Now, unfortunately, it's not all of them. We're getting four to start. Crossing fingers we get more.
Oh. Well, unfortunately, it's in Japan, and I don't live there.
Well, we can plan a Speak Beastie trip to Japan and go.
I have been saying that for years.
Perfect.
Literally.
So, what can we see at Universal Japan in the future on our Speak Beastie trip? There will be hippogriffs as part of the Hippogriff Magical Lesson. It's a stage performance that lets audiences learn how to be respectful to hippogriffs so we're not having a Draco Malfoy situation on our hands. You know, always positive. We know them, we love them. A Niffler is going to be out and about in front of Owl Post. Apparently, they need to check all of the mail to make sure there's no treasure. Because they'll take it, so don't ship anything valuable through the Owl Post. In front of Zonko's? I never say this right. I'm a bad Harry Potter fan.
Zonko's, I think.
Yeah, Zonko's.
Thank you. So in front of Zonko's, there'll be a pink pygmy puff.
Cute!
I don't know if this translation's correct because I was reading the direct thing from the website, the Universal website, so it was all in Japanese. So I used Google Translate because I'm not fluent in Japanese, unfortunately. And it said that the Pygmy Puff would be crying.
Hang on, I'm going to look. There's definitely an English page for Universal Osaka. I'm going to see what it says on there.
I was like, why is the Pygmy Puff crying?
Maybe it means, like, making
noise?
Noise,
that's
yeah.
That's why like that makes the most sense, that it's like making cute chirpy noises or something. So there, it'll be there. You can go and take pictures with it, and it wouldn't be Harry Potter or a Fantastic Beast if someone wasn't smuggling an animal in somewhere. So next to Hogsmeade Station, you can see someone who may have smuggled in a dragon egg and it may have hatched. So there's a baby dragon.
Cute.
Who could have smuggled a dragon egg into Hogsmeade?
I don't know. Definitely not Hagrid.
No, of course not.
Definitely not.
Absolutely not.
It was Draco, clearly. Obviously.
Yeah. Draco, dragon.
Yeah, works. No, that tracks.
Yeah. So that's what we have going on soon in Universal Japan. I think that's going to be really awesome.
Japan gets all the cool stuff.
They really... I was telling Liz before we started recording, when we went there a couple of years ago, they have, like, a full dinosaur walk-around meet and greet.
They just appreciate animals.
They do! I get to pet a stegosaurus!
And, like, that's all I want.
Like, I remember we were standing in the Jurassic Park area... And then a stegosaurus comes out, and stegosauruses are my favorite dinosaur. So I just lost my mind. I'm just looking and pointing at the stegosaurus. I can't even talk. And Chris is just like, yeah, yes, yes, babe. I see. Yes, it's a stegosaurus. Yes, I know. It was so great. But I'm not even surprised that they're doing this because they go so hard over there.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really cool to see like the videos and stuff once it's actually going.
I'm excited. Sure.
Especially, like, animatronic stuff for the hippogriff. Like, that's going to look cool. It's going to be awesome. Then, in connection with our Phoenix Register, is our owl post. From Jerry, who happened to see the Muggle Knight article about the new Fantastic Beasts at Universal Japan. And Jerry says... How I wish they would do this in Orlando. It would certainly inspire me to schedule another trip there. I can't afford Japan. The experience sounds great. I agree, Jerry. I also cannot afford Japan. So,
well, the thing is, like, I'd want to go to Japan. I'd want to experience, like, regular Japan. I'd also want to go to Universal, and I'd also want to go to Disney. And that's so, a lot.
It's a lot.
It is a lot, but it is doable. Like, I am not rich, but...
Well, this summer, I'm going to California.
Nice!
So, doing that first.
Nice, nice, nice.
Maybe next summer, because this summer we're doing Alaska, so...
Ooh!
It's our belated honeymoon. It's going to be a good time.
Nice. My parents have done an Alaskan cruise.
Ooh. Nice!
And this is creature-related. A story from my parents' Alaskan cruise is they did a, like, meet... the sled dogs thing. And it was like on a like iceberg island.
Ooh.
And then like a storm passed through. And so they had to like be there longer because the boat couldn't go back. And so then because they were stuck there for extra long, the person in charge of the sled dog thing was like, well, I'll just bring out the puppies.
Oh my god.
And brought out the puppies.
Nice. That's
at least
great.
That's how I remember the story. It could be different, but I...
Nope, that's how it happened. They're living the dream.
That's what we're sticking with.
Yeah. God, I wish that were me.
Right?
That's awesome. Now I need to somehow schedule that for my trip. Yeah. Puppies and all.
Yes.
We also have another owl post from Jerry. Jerry really wrote in a lot this week. We appreciate it.
We love it, Jerry. Yeah. Thank you.
And Jerry has a response to our episode 171 question about which scene that they preferred. They note, both are very enjoyable scenes with a mix of danger, sentiment, humor, action, teamwork, and more that are very enticing. I prefer the manticore dance. However, while it is roll on the floor funny, it's also tragic. Because when I think that the prisoners we see killed by the mother and eaten by the babies are apt to just be innocent and potentially as nice as Theseus says. Valid. Valid. Jerry also says, I feel I should be much more upset instead of saying, since Newt, Theseus, Teddy, and Pigott escape, all is good. I feel that.
Totally valid.
It's very valid. Mixed feelings.
Yeah. Which reminded Jerry that the Wizarding World law enforcement really sucks.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Right. Goes on to discuss about Hagrid being sent to Azkaban without a trial in Chamber of Secrets, right? They just assumed it was him again. Off he went. And Jerry was like, and then when I learned that Sirius was also condemned without a trial and so many other miscarriages of justice in the Harry Potter books, I thought it was just the British wizarding system that had bad law enforcement or prison systems. Right? But in the first Fantastic Beasts movie, we see the U.S. was ready to execute Tina and Newt without a real trial. Just
honestly, that's the, like, craziest one.
Really? Yeah, like, this is America!
And, like, a full-on, like, let me have this thing just suck everything out of you in this weird... That whole scene gets me every time. Yeah, great. This is wonderful, Jerry. We appreciate all of this. Yeah. Jerry also says, by the way, I very much enjoy your podcast. I am a 65-year-old Hufflepuff who just started listening to podcasts in this past year, and they mostly listen to Speak Beastie and Mugglecast. Jerry's favorite book is Prisoner of Azkaban, and Jerry's favorite movie is the first Fantastic Beasts movie.
Yay, Jerry! Thank you!
That is such a valid opinion.
Such a valid opinion.
Those are the two about beasts.
Right? It's true! Yeah! Also, I think that's so fun that Jerry's 65-year-old Hufflepuff just got into podcasts. Like, I love that. It shows podcasts really are for any age and not just, like, certain generations, because I feel like that's the thought process among a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
I think my mom, whose age I won't disclose, I guess, she listens to us, and then I think, like, a podcast about cults.
Nice. So.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
I love that.
My mom, again, the sponsor of today's episode. listens to these, listens to us, and also, like, a lot of NPR podcasts.
Nice, nice.
And, like, my dad listens to Marc Maron. So.
Nice. I used to listen to This American Life, but now I need, like, happy, fluffy podcasts,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which... I guess sometimes isn't always Speak Beastie when we're talking about the injustices of the Wizarding World governments.
Well, but that's not real.
True.
Injustices only exist in the Wizarding World.
Speaking of injustices in the Wizarding World, that leads us into our main discussion.
Yeah, they still haven't made it out.
Still haven't made it out. We're in scene 60 to 63 of the screenplay. So we're starting with scene 60, interior, Erkstag prison, same time, night.
Best scene.
Yes, agreed.
I think last week I said that the, you know, whole Lally fight thing is the best scene, but this is the other best scene.
No, this scene
right after each other
is so good. So both times. Oh. Okay, so real quick, scene 60, for those who aren't looking at the screenplay right now, is where Teddy and Pickett are doing their escape from the cubbyholes and stealing the tie from the warder. It also includes the moment where Teddy, the warder falls back, hits the cubbyholes, knocks Pickett out with Newt's wand. Pickett is falling through the air and flailing. Teddy reaches up. Pickett reaches out his little hand to take Teddy's hand to get caught because they're bros, right? Teddy says, not today! Reaches for a coin and completely ignores Pickett.
Oh, Pickett. Pickett was trying so hard.
Every time. Like, I saw this in the theaters twice, and both times, it's a huge pop. Everyone loves that scene. Everyone's laughing so hard.
This is what I want the movies to be. Mm-hmm. Just this.
Yes.
For 2.5 hours.
I mean, it's such a good action sequence, and it gives you what, like, a lot of people thought the series was going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. It's all the cute, all the adorable, all the action rolled up into one, honestly.
Also, shout out to, like, you know, the whole design and CGI team for making these two specifically be realistic looking creatures that still have a lot of personality.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
For sure.
Because a lot of times you get these CGI, live action Lion King, where
yep.
they look realistic. They look amazing. But it's like, yeah, but they just look realistic. Where's the personality? Why yeah. do I care?
Yeah, they just, they can't emote because animals can't emote.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, also, I just want to point out that if you're watching the movie on HBO Max, I don't know if this is the case, like, on the DVD as well, but the closed captioning on HBO Max refers to Pickett as Pick, and it's so cute.
That's great.
I think that's what the DVD captioning does, too, because it's probably just because it's shorter.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's really cute.
That makes sense that they'd have, like, the same, like, caption file or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to refer to Pickett as Pick from now on.
That's his name.
It's his name now. Don't wear Pick. It out.
All right, so moving on from scene 60, we are moving into scene 61, interior, cell block, Erkstag, same time, night. We have, it just begins with Theseus murdering a baby manticore.
It'd be like that sometimes.
Sometimes it just be like that. You just step on a baby manticore. And,
yeah.
Like, my big thought about this was they went with this being manticores. And manticores, like, this is not something that was made up for Harry Potter. Manticores are a beast from Greek mythology. We know exactly what they look like. They have the human head. They have the lion body. They've got some other stuff. I don't remember. And they basically scorpion just make tail. Them. Yeah, they basically just focus in on the scorpion tail. And it's, I feel like if they'd just gone with, we only really see the babies. You could argue, like, we could argue, and I mean specifically us, because this is something we would argue, that maybe they grow the human part during puberty, and it would be weird to see, like, human baby faces on a scorpion body or whatever, and
it
so, and then, like, you just see glimpses of the mama, you see, like, the human hand, or you see the lion paw, or you see the tail, so that way it's clear it's a manticore. But we don't. We see that it's basically just a giant scorpion.
It's weird.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to, like, how they've, specifically with this trilogy, taken known creature descriptions, both of, like, right, stuff from Greek mythology and things that the author made up and just completely butchered them on screen, where I'm like, what is that? Because, right, like, as adorable as Pickett is, the way that they made Bowtruckles is not how it's written out in Fantastic Beasts, and it's just like, usually it's like, okay, it's passable, but this, it's like, I feel like they wanted to focus in on, like, the scarier aspect of it, right? Because, okay, a human hand coming at you in a movie called Fantastic Beasts is like, whatever.
Yeah, fair.
But, like, a huge scorpion tail coming at you in a movie called Fantastic Beasts,
that's pretty scary,
you know.
They could have at least made it more lion-like, you know.
Yeah,
for sure.
But
maybe that was too hard after we got the epic sequence between Pickett and Niffler.
That was the whole budget. Whatever, that just was the CGI throw a scorpion budget. In there.
My other question was, where, like, there's all this space behind the Erkstag. What is this for?
Yeah.
Like, is it just, like, service corridors? I don't know.
Or, like, did they once have, like, way more prisoners in there at some point? Like, was it a more popular prison than it is?
I mean, I think so, because supposedly it was shut down, but it wasn't really shut down. Still, there's all the manticore wouldn't be able to. I guess it can reach into all these corridors, but not as easily.
I mean, maybe it's just to, like, get prisoners lost, right? Like, if they did happen to, you know, to, like, become free in some way, then they're just, like, lost in this sea of corridors.
Oh, that's true. And then, as we can see, nowhere is safe, truly safe from the manticore. So even if they do escape.
Yeah. I think when I watched the movie, what I, like, subconsciously thought was, like, that maybe long ago this was, like, a mine.
Oh, okay.
Or something.
That would
then became a prison.
I think that is supported by, because I feel like it says that it's, I know it's, the design is based on a quarry. So that makes sense.
Quarry. Yeah, I mean, underground mines are really intense. Like, I say that as someone whose husband is, like, working at what will soon become an underground mine. Like, they're They're nothing to joke about. They're confusing and weird and, like...
Yeah.
You know? And they're deep, so, like, I feel like that tracks.
Yeah.
Okay, and I googled German mines to make sure that those are a thing that exists. Because otherwise someone's going to come in and be like, there are no mines in Germany, but there are mines in Germany.
I mean, I feel like there's someone's mines gonna everywhere
Someone's
going to
come in
now.
And be like... no, the soil, I don't know.
It is weird that there is a mine under Berlin, specifically under Potsdamer Platz, but, you know, whatever, it's fine.
Sketchy.
Unless it's one of those things where, like, the entrance is in Potsdamer Platz, but then the actual prison is not under Berlin, it's somewhere else, but...
I mean, maybe. You never know with magic.
Exactly.
Well, I'll bring up my point later. It's not fully relevant yet.
Well, let's see here. My point is that, once again, OSHA clearly not consulted in building this place.
No.
Because there is a pit. Once again, no fence, no labels, no lights, no nothing, no signs. Right. And not only are there none of that safety labeling, the Manticore can get out?
Yeah.
This is just like... every Star Wars spaceship.
There's
a big pit. And what's the purpose of the pit? It's for people to go into it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it's like, so mines aren't just OSHA. They have a thing. It's MSHA here in the States that like just handles the mining stuff. So if there was, like, if this were a mine in the US or whatever, there would have to have, like, berms going around the edge of that hole. So, like, if someone was driving a vehicle or something down there, their wheels would, like, hit the berm. So just, like, this, you know, piles of, like, dirt.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, as, like, safety things. Like, because you have to have those at the end of, like, the corridors and stuff, like, for safety.
I wonder if this could also be, like, this is how, this is, like... the Manticore's natural living space.
Oh, like, maybe they've taken over, like, a Manticore burrow?
Yeah.
Oh.
So they added the cells.
That could be really cool.
But the rest, the tunnels were all on the Manticore.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I don't know why the Manticore would let them do that. I guess they had to find those bugs.
I mean, like, did they talk to the Manticore? Okay. We'll give you all of these juicy, delicious people to eat.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, is there just an agreement that X amount of people have to be put down there every year? Like,
yikes.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, like, pseudo leads in to my point. All the lamps dying feels like something out of a horror movie, right? Like, the lights go out, and then, you know, they're able to get it back up with their wand or whatever, and boom, the monster's waiting.
I wish that that concept, like, had more time to be explored, because it, I mean, honestly, that would make a great, like, Fantastic Beasts horror movie.
Yeah.
Using that more. This whole sequence is, like, a monster movie.
It really is. Yeah. Like, it's definitely got the, like, it's why, another reason why I'm kind of bummed that we see the whole Manticore. I wish it would feel more, it would be scarier if we only got the hints of it.
Yeah. Part of it, also because of, like, the cells, not because there's a lot of creatures, but feels like the weird sequence in that horror parody, Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, I love Cabin in the Woods.
You know, there's, like, all the creatures in their cells, and the team's, like, waiting to see which one gets released. I don't know, but my mind, like, jumped to that. Like, even though there's not a ton of, I mean, I guess there is a ton of creatures down there. They're just all baby manticores. But that's just where my mind jumped to when I was, like, thinking about the horror movie stuff.
That literally made me go, like, oh, man, a Fantastic Beasts movie where all the beasts escape. And then I was like, Shannon.
That was the first one, I think.
Wasn't it? Yeah. This is making me want to, like, write my own Fantastic Beasts horror movie, so... maybe a Patreon thing.
They should just give us the series.
Honestly.
Right? Just give us the rights. We'll write a horror movie. It'll be great.
Yeah. We'll do it. We'll get someone like James Wan or like M. Night Shyamalan in on it. So we have like name recognition.
Yeah. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
With horror
fine.
Movies, yeah. I bet
So they escape.
Yes. So they do escape.
Thank goodness.
Because the tie is a portkey.
Woo.
And vindication for when I got really obsessed with what is this tie.
What
story.
Is the tie?
What is the tie?
So
I'm just going to read this description real quick. Racing towards them is Teddy, Theseus' tie clenched in his teeth, Pickett riding atop like a cowboy, carrying Newt's wand. Name a more iconic duo. You can't. You can't.
No. You can't. You really can't.
All right. So the boys escape. And that leads us into scene 62. Exterior, wooded area, continuous next morning. And Newt and Theseus land in some forest. They get up. Theseus still has the manticore tentacle wrapped around his waist.
So this is interesting because that means that, like, there's a limit to how much portkeys can take.
Because
it didn't take the whole manticore.
Yeah. Maybe that's for the better, though. Or maybe,
like,
it's a plot hole.
Or maybe a creature can, like, resist it.
Maybe.
Have we ever had someone, like, taken by force through a portkey? Like, Cedric and Harry were taken by the Triwizard Cup, but they weren't. They didn't realize what was happening.
I mean,
maybe it's like an area thing. Like the portkey will only transport things within a certain area. Because like at the camp in Goblet of Fire, they all had to be within a pretty close proximity of the boot in order to be able to all transport.
Yeah, I was also looking up just now about scorpions, right? Because like because they're. I think they're technically arthropods. They shed. Mm-hmm. So, like,
ugh.
But I wonder if it could, like, control that shedding, like, as part of a magical thing, so it could just, like, shed the shell, like, of that limb.
Yeah, maybe.
Except for the fact that, like, if it's just a shell, it shouldn't be able to move on its own.
Well, it shouldn't, but, like.
Which this one does, it's like, okay, bye.
That's creepy.
And, like, goes into the Black Lake.
Yeah, I'm not about it. That. It creeps me out. I don't like things that move. Like, I don't like it.
And see, this is, again, something that I want all the movies to be about, is how the giant squid feels about this tentacle in the
lake. Yes!
Yeah.
Like, did it fight? Or was it a delicious snack? Or did the mermaid steal it? Like, what happened?
Yeah. Was it, like...
Truly, I just want, like, animated short films. No dialogue. I'm just the beast.
Please.
And very so like good. The original Clone Wars series, for any Star Wars people who remember that.
Yeah, Clone Wars.
The original, like, 15-minute ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are some
that,
good
That, but Fantastic Beasts.
That would be good. I'm down. I'm
yeah.
down.
But listen to us, Warner Brothers.
I feel like the squid totally ate it, though.
Yeah, for sure. Like, she absolutely did.
Totally.
Delish.
I think no contest. She just, like, slurped it and was like, yeah. That's fine.
It was like she cool was at that? Some crab bake or something, and it was just bloop.
Nope, delicious. Thank you, boys.
Yeah.
So we are at Hogwarts.
Woo.
And I put this in the wrong section, but we have in the screenplay near this point, we have a beautiful exterior rendering of the Hogwarts castle. Yep. And I do not love the fan service in these movies, but that shot of Hogwarts across the water, Hedwig's theme swells. There is a person playing Quidditch for some reason. But yeah. Man, that scene just hits. It hits.
It does. It does. Anytime I get to see the castle, it hits.
It made me think about going to the studio tour and seeing the Hogwarts model at the end and just crying. And that just brought back that memory of seeing it and just being so overwhelmed by it.
So true.
Love that castle.
It's so good. We move into the Great Hall in scene 63. Interior, Great Hall, Hogwarts, moments later, morning.
So now I will bring up my point, which is it's morning now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in Scotland. But we were just in Berlin, supposedly. Maybe Erkstag is somewhere else. At night.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say it's in Germany. We just don't know it's necessarily under Berlin.
Yeah.
It could be anywhere in Germany.
Yeah.
And that's, they were very much presenting the whole prison escape and the dinner as happening at the same time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I can accept that they weren't happening simultaneously. But still, that is, they, like, this whole prison adventure was a very long adventure, apparently. So it went from dinner time to breakfast time at Hogwarts, and apparently Quidditch game time at Hogwarts.
Hey, someone's getting an early practice in.
Maybe.
It's Oliver Wood's great-great-great-grandfather. Probably.
I mean, could the dinner have just been really late?
Like, I mean, I think it could have, but
I don't know what the still. Standard eating time in Germany is.
Germany dinner time.
I can't speak to...
Between 6 like, and 7 p.m.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I can't speak to, like, what it was in 1932, but when we were there, people weren't like, you're eating dinner at 6 o'clock? Noobs. Like,
well, you know, it's like, I went to Argentina, and you eat dinner at, like, 10 p.m. there. And I was like, what?
Whoa. Yeah.
It was late. I was like, I'm ready for bed.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe at the latest, the dinner would have started at, like, 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even so, though.
Yeah. Because I'm like, okay, I could see that, like, it maybe takes longer for Newt to get to the prison. Mm-hmm. And then it takes longer for him to find Theseus in the prison. And then they are scuttling around for longer. But still, that's like 12 hours.
It's a lot of time to be fighting a manticore in a prison.
And there's an hour time difference between Germany and Scotland.
And, like, Lally and the gang are settled at Hogwarts. Like, they have changed back into their normal clothes. They have been here for a while.
Yeah, like, it seems to me like they must have gotten there last night and then took a nap.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know. It's like, watching the movie, I didn't question it, but then reading the screenplay and thinking about it more, I was like, wait.
Yeah.
How's this work?
Yeah. It's one of those.
Guess there must have been some time dilation.
We love a good time dilation.
They were just swirling around with that portkey for a long time.
They were.
It took a hot while with the manticore tentacle on them.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. It took them like 3 hours to kick the manticore off.
That's it.
Out of the portkey. I'm just, I know we see the visualization of the portkey in the fourth movie, but I'm imagining it's like, you know, the TARDIS goes through the vortex and they're just kicking the manticore the whole time as they're going through the vortex.
That's it.
That's what it is.
Accepted.
In speaking of Lally and the gang, it starts with Lally sitting with a few students finishing breakfast, and she's giving career advice.
Love her.
Love it.
Saying, I would highly recommend learning charms, which is adorable.
I mean, as they should. Charms are important.
They are important. And the thing that I noticed is that we see kids of all houses sitting together. Like, the only time we really see a clump of all one house is the Slytherin boys that give Jacob the cockroach clusters a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. But, like, Jacob's sitting with, like, a Hufflepuff and a Gryffindor and a Ravenclaw. And Lally's sitting with, I think it's, like, a Ravenclaw and a Slytherin. So these kids are all just kind of sitting wherever, and they're not sticking to the house tables. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Love that.
Maybe the house rivalries during that time weren't quite the same as they were, you know, the like 60 Maybe. Years later when Harry's attending.
I could see that, especially before we get into these big Wizarding mm-hmm. World Wars.
For sure.
Also, I can just see it being more casual at breakfast time.
Oh, that's
also true. Yeah. Right? Because everyone's just kind of wandering in. Like,
yeah, it seems less like, it's dinner time. Everybody comes at this time. And more just like, you can come to breakfast if you want.
Hang on. I'm going to grab my copy of Prisoner of Azkaban because I feel like I should know this as the number one Percy Weasley stan, but I feel like there's a part where like either he's sitting with Penny at breakfast or Penny's sitting with him at breakfast and they're in different houses.
Yeah, I totally remember that.
I think so. Yeah. And there are definitely times where, or at least one time where Luna comes over.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me see.
Okay, I got my copy of Prisoner of Azkaban. Let me see here.
So proud.
I know it's the 10 galleons part, because Percy says, I haven't got 10 galleons.
I also haven't got 10 galleons.
Yeah, what a mood. I love you, Percy.
Me too. I'm going to put that in the show notes. It's going to say, quote Shannon, I love you, Percy.
Yes.
All right, this is boring. I'll look it up later.
Okay, I'm looking at my ebook versions. I'm trying to see if I can find it.
So next up, we have, while Liz is looking for that, we have in the screenplay the Daily Prophet that Lally shows Newt of with the headline "Murderous Muggle." So we can see the rest of the headlines. Mayhem at German Ministry of Magic. Grindelwald escapes attack. Ludow and Vincenzo Santos united against Grindelwald. Muggle's fantastical accomplishments, which are Picket and pastries. Brazilian wizards enchant the European wizarding community. Wardour Street scandal. French potion maker trapped in the attic.
Good.
And then down at the very bottom, is it on this one? I can't remember. Oh, no, it's on here. Like, along the bottom, there's, like, the different sections, and one of them is arts and farts. Which makes me giggle because I'm 12. But one of the things that I focused on in the doc is that if you look in the upper right-hand corner, it says, printed in Great Britain, London, Venus and Pisces, 1932!
Yeah! And I'm looking at the actual paper that ends up in the movie. You can't read that at all. But it is definitely, like, the same layout, you know?
Yeah.
It's the exact same paper.
And also, because this is my thing, I do way too much research on small details. Because it does say Venus and Pisces, I was able to look up where were the planets at what time in 1932.
That's so smart.
And so we're able to, because it says Venus and Pisces, we're able to figure that the events of the movie take place sometime between January 19th, 1932, when Venus entered Pisces, and February 12th of 1932, when Venus entered Aries. Ooh. So it's sometime within that first month of 1932.
Incredible.
Right. Thanks.
Okay, I found the spot.
Okay.
So it's morning. Harry's coming into the Great Hall with the Firebolt after the Quidditch game. And everyone wants to see the Firebolt. So it says,
okay.
People from the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables were soon coming over to look. Percy's Ravenclaw girlfriend, Penelope Clearwater, actually asked if she could hold it. And then Percy's like, now, Penny, no sabotage. And he mentions the bet and how they have a 10-gallon bet on the outcome of the match.
Okay, so it's not exactly what I was thinking. I thought that Penny was, like, either there or he was over there with her, but she just came over to sabotage Harry's broom because yes. That's my girl Penny. She is ready to yes. sabotage and destroy.
That is what seems to be happening, yes.
Love her.
But still, like, a more casual thing of, right, people moving up in between tables and...
Yeah.
There we go. All right.
I also, going back to this scene when Lally shows Newt the paper, I love Theseus being like... Jacob tried to kill Grindelwald? He's so like, oh, maybe I...
Do I like this guy?
The muggle. Well, then you pointed it out, but later he, like, steadies Jacob. New best friends.
Yup.
I love it.
We'll get to that moment.
Yeah. Liz, you got some notes about Jacob's relationship with the kids?
I do. Right? So it talks about in the screenplay how Jacob... You know, Blanche's at the whole, oh, I was never a fan of cockroach clusters myself thing. And I love that Jacob thought he had something over the kids, right? When they're like, oh, like, can we see your wand? And he's like, oh, you know, it's snakewood. It's rare, blah, blah, blah. Only for, like, them to be the ones with the last laugh and giving him the cockroach clusters and, like, getting him to think they were, like, good and popular candy. I just think it's funny.
Yeah, I thought it was in the screenplay, once Newt points out their cockroach clusters, it says that Jacob blanches, which to me makes sense. He's, like, really shocked and, like, oh, God, like, I can't believe it. But in the movie, he just kind of gives them this, like, really look to the kids, and they just start laughing.
It's good.
Also, the visual gag of, hey, it's my wizard friends, we're like this, and then he crosses his fingers and then puts his thumb out and goes, that's me over here. Like, that is so funny.
Yeah. This whole so scene funny. Is available on the HBO Max YouTube, by the way.
Oh, nice.
So I just have it open on YouTube, but so if anyone, you know, doesn't have it readily available to watch, You can just go watch it on YouTube.
Next, we have, for some bonus material, we have a Hufflepuff notebook.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So it's very cute. Got the badgers. So it's got the H's. It's like a composition book, and it's really cute. I'm sure Amina Lima sells these. If they don't, they're missing out. Yeah. They should.
They totally should.
I'm 99% sure they do.
In the movie, at this moment, as we go up to Dumbledore, here, I'll, like, send you guys a screenshot. Because they haven't done enough with this podium of wings. The wings are, like, perfectly positioned behind Dumbledore's head, so it's like he has wings on his head.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, he does. That's great. That's really funny.
I will put this in the show notes, because this is a very, very funny shot that Shannon has shared with us.
That is. I love it. I'm never going to see Jude Law without this again.
And it's like, they keep, the shot is like moving, it's zooming out from him, and they keep those wings there.
That's our great.
Angel.
It's like a reverse Truly. Icarus. Kind of thing, right? Because Icarus has it on his ankles, and Dumbledore has it on his
Hermes,
head.
Hermes has it on his ankles.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Or, yes. And then we have some notes about Dumbledore in here.
Yes, we do. The first is from Jude Law. He says, quote, "I think Hogwarts is the place that Dumbledore feels most at home. It's a sanctuary from the world." Mm-hmm. Then immediately following that, we have a quote from Colleen Atwood. Quote, "In this film, Dumbledore is looking a little more refined than we've seen him previously, particularly with regard to materials and fabrics. The tweediness of his costumes conveys the idea of luxury and comfort, and the very soft grays harken to the lavender that he wears later in the Potter films."
You know, I really respect Colleen Atwood, and I think he looks great and his costumes are great. Put him in actual purple, you cowards. Don't just harken to it. Let the man wear lavender.
Purple velvet suits.
I want like a green carnation somewhere.
Please.
Yes.
But yes, I'm agreeing with Janin that as far as Hogwarts being the place we feel most at home, agreed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then next is a costume sketch of Dumbledore, and he's looking very, I get very dapper, but I'm not seeing any purple velvet suits.
I mean, so. To be fair, it is a black and white drawing.
Yeah, but it's not.
Yeah, purple. But it could have an arrow pointing True. That says purple.
True.
Let me see. Then we have this magazine. Yeah, it's the front of Transfiguration Today. I guess because it quotes Dumbledore?
Yeah, because I don't think we see this in the movie.
I don't think so either.
I mean, it was probably a prop made that then just like doesn't get a close up, but.
Yeah, probably.
It's not like the paper where it's important to the scene.
Yeah. There is a 13 new spells to try on the family cat, which sounds like a way to not have a family cat anymore because it's gonna run away.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I want to try these tips to streamline your spells. I'm not sure what there is to streamline.
Is it just point and cast?
Are these tips to get better at the nonverbal casting?
I guess so.
I don't know.
What's Gamp's Law again?
Is that's the one where, like, you can't make stuff.
Yeah, that's the whole, like, you can't...
Like, the food stuff, right?
I think so.
Yes.
Hang on, I'm gonna look it up, because otherwise we're gonna... There are so many people just screaming at their phones now.
I've got it. There were five principal exceptions to Gamp's Law, one of which was food. Yep, can't produce food out of thin air... I mean, that's basically it. You can't produce things, certain things out of thin air. So how is that being loosened?
Yeah, how is that going to be loosened?
I don't think that was an actual law. I think it was more a theory of science.
Yeah, a principle of magic that someone defined. It's like the laws of gravity.
Yeah. But I don't know. Transfiguration Today might also just be kind of a gossip mag.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. It's where Rita Skeeter got her
13 new spells to try on the family cat. So.
Okay, so the kiddos leave because they've had enough of feeding Jacob cockroach clusters. And Dumbledore congratulates them. Theseus is like, excuse me? Because the plan not going to plan was the plan.
This is also a great scene to see how much shorter Dan is from the rest of
oh,
them.
Oh, yeah. He's itty bitty.
He is.
He's like a head shorter than Eddie.
Like, I didn't think about it, but like, I was like, yeah. The picture that I, when I met him, came up in my memories recently, and he's about my height. And yeah. I'm like, I'm 5'6". So he's
five,
not
5'7", apparently.
Okay.
Whereas so, like, Eddie is 6 feet.
Yeah.
Same.
Big height difference.
Catherine is 5'11".
Wow, like she's tall. Woman.
I wish.
Allison Sudol is 5'6".
I wish I was, I was accurately 5 feet. I round up and I'm 5 feet.
Wow.
I'm like 5'9".
Wow.
That sounds wonderful.
It's pretty nice. So then Dumbledore makes Bhutan out of thin air.
He does. And
for, let's be honest, no reason.
For magic reasons.
I mean, it's very cool. And
it is.
But yeah, you're right. Like, there's nothing that he did there that couldn't have been conveyed by just telling them.
With words. It's just to make Newt guess where it is.
Can you imagine if he guessed wrong? If he was like, I think this is Malaysia.
3 points
and
from Hufflepuff.
Dumbledore was like, I am taking points away from the literal children here because you're so dumb.
I also just want to know more about this spell and, like, what it is. And I want it to be used more. This cool, smoky spell.
Yeah, and, like, mountains come up around the gang, and Jacob kind of like, whoa, whoa, what? And Theseus reaches out, steadies him, and he says, it's all right. And it's
yes.
Theseus, my husband.
So good.
And the quote that I still need to cross stitch is, dangerous times favor dangerous men. It's a really good quote.
Such a good quote. So good. So while Shannon is wondering about the spell, I'm wondering if those 3 house points actually went to Hufflepuff.
I did wonder that, like, too.
Did the hourglass, like, award them? Because, you know, it's a teacher giving points in the castle.
That's true.
Like, how does that magic work?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'd like to know. But also, to me, this whole scene is them, like, wrapping their heads around the whole Grindelwald was a criminal. And now he's a candidate in, like, literally, like, a snap of a finger. And that just feels, like, very reminiscent to me of, like, current political things.
Yeah.
And it's weird to me, but I guess it's just, like, media mimics real world. And
yeah. You know? And we wrap up the scene with Dumbledore telling them that they'll be dining with his brother in the village. Should you need anything before then, Minerva is here, because I guess Minerva doesn't have classes to teach or anything. She's just available to hang out with you weirdos.
Totally.
Maybe that's then, it. Maybe she's not a teacher yet. She's just Dumbledore's assistant. No,
she's a TA.
Professor.
A student prof.
Yeah.
And Lally leans over and goes, Dumbledore has a brother?
All of us asking that question.
Right?
Asking, and where's the goats?
Theseus and Newt had this moment of like, huh. Which is weird because they know that. I don't know. It's, go figure.
Yeah, let me go look at that.
Well, and that wraps up our discussion of scenes 60 to 63 of the screenplay.
Yes.
There's a lot going on in those scenes.
There's a lot happening.
There's a lot happening in this movie.
Honestly.
Yes, there is.
And Dumbledore keeps being like, it's confusing on purpose. And I'm like, I know, but what if it wasn't?
Counterpoint, maybe no?
Maybe
just have a straightforward plot.
Like, to me, this sounds so bad, but like, everything going chaotic and Dumbledore being like, oh, it was supposed to be that way, just feels like there were a lot of ideas on the table when everything was being written, and they wanted to incorporate them all, and this was the way they figured out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, listen, it works better than when that seems like what they did with the last movie.
True that. And I mean, at least if we don't get another one, at least we got to see all of the good action. So,
yeah,
that's something.
Yeah,
this was a pretty good movie.
I liked it.
Yeah. All right, shall we open the Newt case?
Yes, let's explore.
So today in the Newt case, I don't have a regular mythological folklore creature. I have bees.
Ooh. This is so, I love this. This is so good.
Well, because I was like, ah, it's a Dumbledore scene and Dumbledore means bumblebee.
That's so such a good idea. I like so cute. It.
Let's do bees. Let's see bees in mythology. There's a lot of different like bee related stories. And so you guys can see my minimal notes and links here. I have three notebook pages full of notes.
Wow.
Nice.
In my Speak Beastie notebook.
Ooh.
So there are a lot of bee-related stories, but I didn't write down, I'm not going to cover the ones where it's like, and then a god turned into a bee to do this thing, or they sent a bee to go sting this guy. I'm more interested in, like, what are the beliefs that people had about bees.
Cool.
So.
Cool, cool, cool.
First up, we've got in Africa, in the Kalahari Desert, the San people. Or the San people? I'm going to say San. So for them, water is, you know, very important. I mean, water in a lot of cultures, obviously very important. So they have, before humans were created, there was this mantis. And it seems like it was just known as Mantis, this like legendary hero who was sent out to find the purpose of life. And he asked a bee to guide him. So the bee carried the mantis all over the world, carried the mantis over water. And then the bee became so tired from all this that it set the mantis down on a flower and it planted a seed in the mantis. Don't really know exactly what that means. But then the bee died, but then the mantis, the seed in the mantis, when the flower was floating in the water. Sorry, that's why water was important. It's flower floating in water. The mantis wakes up, and then the seed within the mantis grows into the first human. And so that is a story of bees, a very ancient story of bees.
Neat.
Unfortunately, the bees die, but bees don't die in the other stories. Another ancient belief from Egypt is that bees are the tears of the sun god Ra.
Oh,
ooh, fancy.
Egypt also thought that, I mean, obviously thought that bees had some connection to gods because they thought they were the tears of Ra, but also seemed to associate honey with death, not necessarily in a negative way. They would put honey products like in tombs as funerary gifts. There was, with a lot of cultures, bees are associated with the gods and are associated as creatures that can like move between worlds or are connected to the underworld, are messengers from the gods. They are also associated with prophecies. And we've got a few different Greek and Roman stories. So first up, we've got the Greek god Aristaeus. He's the god of beekeeping.
Neat.
Which, who knew that there was just a god of beekeeping? So he, in probably his like most famous story, he chased, why didn't I look up any of the pronunciations? Eurydice?
Eurydice.
Eurydice. Yeah, I was like, that's not quite right. He chased Eurydice. And she stepped on a snake and got bitten and died. So then after that, as punishment, all of his bees got sick and started to die. It was I saw one thing where it just kind of seemed like this was cosmic punishment. And then another thing where it was like her sisters specifically punishing him by making his bees die. So what he had to do was sacrifice 12 animals. They were very specific about these types of animals. And then after doing so, Like 3 days later, he came back and a new swarm of bees had appeared in one of the carcasses. And so he took those bees back to his apiary and had bees again.
Wow.
Eurydice is still dead. So another thing, bees are associated with Apollo. This is where they're somehow connected to prophecies. But this is a very sort of tenuous connection. The Oracle of Delphi is sometimes called the Delphian Bee. And that's kind of where that ends. We don't know why. Okay. And then there's these three, like, nymphs who are called the Thriae. Their names are Melania, Cleodora, and either Daphnis or Corsia. And they are sometimes kind of mixed together with these three bee maidens. It's not totally clear if they were the same figures or not, but both are associated with, like, giving Apollo some of his powers. And that they were sometimes depicted with women's heads, but then the bodies and wings of bees. Huh. And had divination powers. Also, honey in Greek myth is the food of the gods. Gods eat honey, and honey was supposedly first discovered by a nymph named Melissa, and the name Melissa, didn't know this, means bee.
Huh!
Who knew, Neat. Right?
Not me.
So then there's a Roman myth, and this is recorded in... So I actually don't know if this was, like, a real Roman myth or if it's just Aesop's fables, if Aesop just made it up. But it is Jupiter and the bee. And so this myth is there's a queen bee. She wants protection from people and animals who are trying to steal their honey, which is not a real issue. You can eat honey. It's okay. But she wants protection, so she... gets some honey and she flies up to Mount Olympus. I read one version of this that was a very Christianized version that was like, she flew up to heaven. And I'm like, I don't think that's where Jupiter lives, but okay. So she gives him some honey and he's like, this is the best honey I've ever had. And she's like, I know, right? Can you give me a stinger to protect my honey? And some versions seem to have it that he's reluctant because he loves humans so much. Other versions say that his wife Juno intervenes. But either way, it's that he does give her the stinger, but with the caveat that if she stings someone, she will die.
Oh.
And so this comes from the sort of still modern belief, for lack of a better word, that honeybees die when they sting because their stinger gets ripped out.
Do they not?
So they do when they sting humans because human skin is so thick.
Okay.
That the barbs stay stuck. But when they sting certain other animals, that doesn't necessarily happen.
Got it.
That tracks.
So it makes sense that we as humans thought, well, I guess they just die when they sting. But they don't necessarily.
Got it. Interesting.
Couple more things. There was a Mycenaean and Minoan goddess named Potnia who had a bee emblem. And it seems like she was also known... I'm not sure if this is a direct translation of Potnia or not, but she was also known as, like, the pure mother bee or the queen of wild bees. Or, like, the queen of animals. So she's depicted with animals in general a lot, but also specifically associated with bees, and sometimes depicted with the body and wings of a bee. And she has followers or priestesses called bees, but called Melissae. Demeter also apparently had followers called bees, and Artemis was also sometimes called Melissa. So just all of these associations with gods just being bees, so for some reason. So Last thing I'll go into here, and I want to read a little poem for everyone. Let me open the poem back up. So there is a bit more of a modern tradition of telling the bees. And this is where beekeepers tell their bees of important events that happen in their lives, mostly of important deaths, but it's also like births, weddings, stuff like that. And it was said that if you didn't tell the bees, there would be some kind of punishment, like the bees would leave, or they would die, or they would stop producing honey. And you would, for deaths, like drape black fabric over the beehives. And this is actually, you can look up, you know, very recently that there are, you know, beehives all over England that technically belong to the king or queen. And so when Queen Elizabeth died, the head beekeeper had to go around and tell all the bees.
Oh my goodness.
And be like, hey, the queen died, but you're going to be okay because we have this king to take care of you. And the bees are like, okay.
The bees are like, we don't speak English.
So this is this. We don't know where this tradition came from, but it was really big in England and then other European countries and then the US, which seems to be because of people immigrating to the US who had these traditions. And that may have derived from these other more ancient traditions where bees are connected to the underworld in some way. We have to tell them about people dying to lead them to the underworld. So I wanted to read this poem that is not about magic and stuff, but it's called Telling the Bees, and it's by John Greenleaf Whittier, and it's from 1858, I think. And the interesting thing about this poem is that he wrote it because the tradition of telling the bees was starting to die out. So this was, you know, the 1850s, and it was dying out, and he wanted to kind of keep it alive. And he was from New England, so this is US. This is Telling the Bees. Here is the place. Right over the hill runs the path I took. You can see the gap in the old wall still, and the stepping stones in the shallow brook. There is the house with the gate red barred, and the poplars tall, and the barn's brown length, and the cattle yard, and the white horns tossing above the wall. There are the beehives ranged in the sun, and down by the brink of the brook are her poor flowers, reed or run, pansy and daffodil, rose and pink. A year has gone as the tortoise goes, heavy and slow, and the same rose blows, and the same sun glows, and the same brook sings of a year ago. That's the same sweet clover smell in the breeze, and the June sun warm tangles his wings of fire in the trees, setting as then over Fernside Farm. I mind me how with a lover's care, from my Sunday coat I brushed off the burrs and smoothed my hair, and cooled at the brookside my brow and throat. Since we parted a month had passed, to love a year. Down through the beeches I looked at last, on the little red gate and the well sweep near. I can see it all now, the slantwise rain of light through the leaves, the sundown's blaze on her window pane, the bloom of her roses under the eaves. Just the same as a month before, the house and the trees, the barn's brown gable, the vine by the door, nothing changed but the hives of bees. Before them, under the garden wall, forward and back, went drearily singing the chore girl small, draping each hive with a shred of black. Trembling, I listened. The summer sun had the chill of snow, for I knew she was telling the bees of one gone on the journey we all must go. Then I said to myself, my Mary, weeps for the dead today. Haply her blind old grandsire sleeps the fret and the pain of his age away. But her dog whined low. On the doorway's sill, with his cane to his chin, the old man sat, and the chore girl still sung to the bees stealing out and in, and the song she was singing ever since in my ear sounds on. Stay at home, pretty bees, fly not hence. Mistress Mary is dead and gone. And that's the poem.
That was very nice. Thank you, Shannon.
So that is bees in mythology.
Nice.
And I made myself out of breath from all that talking about bees. I was like, I love reading a poem. Yep. I love bees.
Bees are great.
They are great. That was cool.
That was very cool.
Yeah. I didn't know that they would be like so much stuff that was so similar.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also so much stuff that is unexplained. Just like bees. For some reason, they're all bees.
Everything is bees.
Yeah.
When in doubt, it's bees. Awesome. So thank you, Shannon, for that wonderful newt case on bees. I know I learned a lot about bees. I didn't realize any of that about bees. So for our podcast question today, go ahead and give a little think about why do you think it took Newt and Theseus so long to get to Hogwarts after the others? What was going on there? We'd love to hear your thoughts and answers about it, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or you could shoot us an email at speakbeastie@gmail.com. We'd also really love it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, if you're digging what you're listening to, and we hope you are. Let everyone else know about it by leaving us a review.
While you are leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. I think our Tumblr is still active. I don't know if it's done anything in a while, but it's there, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com for the six of us who are still on Tumblr. And if you feel so inclined, you can also support the show, just like my mom, on patreon.com/speakbeastie. We have cool stickers. Our graphic designer, Carolyn, releases coloring pages every month that are very cute. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Liz from our social media team created gorgeous wallpapers that we post a couple of those every month for you to enjoy. And I know that I have some upcoming travels that are going to, I'm going to be able to get a lot of fun Patreon content out of. So keep an eye out for that. Not saying too much, but I'm just saying I might be meeting up with another Speak Beastie host very soon.
Who could it be?
Who could it be?
That's good because I have no Patreon content planned, so I should probably figure that.
We'll figure something out. Maybe when that mystery Speak Beastie host meets up with me. Who knows?
Let's see. I never have any Patreon content planned. I mean, I have ideas in my head, but I never execute them.
Okay. You should execute them.
I should. Like, maybe
it'd be fun.
Yeah. Maybe I'll take some fun pictures of the pocket wand I picked up this
week. You totally should. You should do a fun. Do you have like a cat or a dog or a fish or something?
I do. I have a cat.
You should take cute pictures of you and your fantastic beast going on magical adventures around your apartment or whatever. That'd be so great.
We should. Maybe I will. I'll contemplate this.
Excellent. I think that wraps it up. I'm Anne.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Liz. Case closed.